Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in on a Monday to the Hoffman Show. It's the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Hey, Internet. Anthony, say hi, Internet. Yeah, he's waving. Now say hi to the radio audience with your voice.
Hey, what's up, Mari?
All right. It's us. We're here. We're going to do a lot of NBA Finals stuff today. We're going to talk about this kind of crazy Desmond Bane trade that happened over the weekend. We're not going to do a big Orlando Magic breakdown, but we're going to talk about like kind of what it means in the larger context of the NBA. Tim Bonteps will talk about both of those with us coming up at 5 o'clock from ESPN. We'll also do a little Commanders at 5:30. John Keim wrote an article on something I've been thinking about anyway, which is always nice. John and I don't even think talked about this one. Sometimes we're talking about stuff and then one of the folks that, writes will write something. I'm like, oh, I guess I was a trial balloon for that article. This wasn't one of those. John just wrote about the Commanders' D-line. Or we could do Linnell's show from Friday, Anthony, because he left his rundown up. Segment
is
one.
Is this the Laramie Tunsil stuff?
No. Segment one, this. Segment two, that. Segment three, this. It's all laid out. It's 12 segments. That's what we got on our show. So we could.
I mean, you might have something good on there.
Unfortunately, I had to close out of his notes to get over to my profile in the computer here. So we are going to go ahead and do our show. I will say the last thing I'll mention on our show, 6 o'clock today, Toby Altizer is going to join us. These Davey Martinez comments, whoo, buddy, they're not good. Not good, Davey. I kind of want to do more on him. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, should we just start there? No, we're going to start with the NBA Finals, which are now tied at 2. They resume tonight with Game 5. Obviously, a critically important game. There are only 3 games left at max. They're all critically important. What's at stake tonight? It's Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and it's tied at 2. What, you need me to explain this to you like you're 5? No, it's Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and before we get to Game 5, just taking a look back at Game 4 and some of the interesting things. And I feel like that was a perfectly fitting game for the series, Anthony, in that it was really, really close. It felt like for long stretches, one team was playing better. But then you look at the score and you're like, that's not as big as it should be in terms of the deficit. And I think that was the weird thing was Oklahoma City ultimately hit 3 threes in the entire game. And it felt like they couldn't do a whole lot offensively. It felt like Indiana was dominating. That building was on fire. And then I looked out at the scoreboard, and Indy's leading by like 2 or 3. And obviously, they had the stretch in the third quarter where they got it up to 10. But that felt like it should have been 20 based off how the rest of the game had gone. And I think that's the thing that's kind of wild about this series is these two teams are both fairly evenly matched and stylistically matched. That it just feels like no team, except for Oklahoma City in Game 2, where Indiana couldn't hit anything, and they cranked the defense all the way up. It just feels like neither team can have these huge runs that we see in NBA games, and that's what you want in the finals, right? What makes regular season basketball is teams will make these huge runs, and like you can be close and kind of play it pretty even for 40 minutes, but eventually, one team's going to make a run the other team doesn't really respond from, and then you get some pretty wide margins, and that's that. If your team can stack a couple of mini runs together, and all of a sudden, it's a 20-point win. I mean, and even in Game 2, we talked about this. Like, Oklahoma City went on one run in the second quarter. It was a 17-2 run, which is forever, for some reason, apparently seared into my brain. But they went into the 17-2 run, and they wound up winning by 16. They were dead even for the other 43 minutes of the game. It was this 5-ish minute, maybe it was longer than that, I have to go back and check, but 5-ish minute, 17-2 run in the second quarter. And other than that, they're mostly trading baskets. The lead never ballooned up to 25. It never got down below like 12. It was just kind of in that like 13-20 type of range in a game you win by like 15 points. And so I think that's the like what this series was the other night too, is Indiana feels like it's they're making a couple of extra plays, but then have a turnover and OKC would get a run out. And okay, well now all of a sudden it's back to a 4-point game. And Indiana's inability to pull away despite feeling like they were playing better left them vulnerable. And then you get the chaos at the end, which I know is part of what you want to talk about, is the potentially Scott Foster-induced chaos at the end. But what do you think about the non-Foster minutes, if you will?
I mean, I think the point you just made in terms of, you know, Indiana not capitalizing on the moments in the games, the end of the third and even the start of the fourth, those shots that you get, like, usually we're seeing them hit these shots because they're not as tired. They, you know, they still got their legs and stuff, you know, under them, and they're capable to, you know, be in rhythm and hit those shots. But missing wide open shots, like looks that you rarely even get against a team like Oklahoma City, just because of how defensively sound they are. Like, you got to capitalize on those moments, and they failed to do that. But also just salute to the Thunder, you know, for sticking with, you know, things and persevering, trying to just keep the game close. Because again, I felt as though the Pacers had a lot of the momentum. They had the home crowd behind them. They were winning. They had a lead, and it seemed to me that, you know, this game was gonna, you know, they were gonna keep it fairly close, and then, you know, the Pacers were gonna pull away in the end. And every time, you know, the Thunder just kept chipping away. And Shea, he finally got it going a little bit. You know, he started getting to the free throw line. And I think that's more so like how the Thunder, you know, operate. Like, once their fearless leader gets going,
yeah.
Because I think he only had 14 points like halfway through the third or something like that. And then he just poured it on.
He definitely got going late. He definitely got going at the free throw line. But I think like the first quarter is a great example of this, right? I think Siakam had five steals in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Whatever the number was. I know he had five for most of the game. And there was the great stat they had, like, you know, ninth player in finals history to have like 20 points, five rebounds, five assists, five steals, whatever the combo of stuff was. But it was 20 points and five steals were like kind of like the big ones. And he's got all these steals. Halliburton comes out pretty aggressive. He's got like four or five assists in the first quarter. Siakam's aggressive. They're hitting shots. They're doing all this stuff. Their defense is, you know, they're pressing. Shea's not even bringing the ball up. He's not even bothering. He's barely involved at all offensively. The score at the end of the first quarter was 35-34 Indiana. And you're just like, man, that's a lot of effort and a lot of stuff that's gone right for you to be up by a point. And there's been points in this series where it's felt the other way, where OKC's feels like they're forcing them. I mean, game one, OKC forced a billion turnovers. And, you know, all of a sudden, Indiana's kind of floating around. You're like, what are you doing here? Why are you still floating around? Don't you know how this goes? This is Oklahoma City Thunder. They win by double digits every game. That's what they do. Next thing you know, Tyrese Halliburton hits a shot with 0.3 seconds to go, gives Indiana their first and only lead of the game, but it's the only one that mattered because it was the final score. And that's been this series. And so we can get into, we will in a second, some of the stuff that happens late in this game. But ultimately, I think Indiana loses it by not taking advantage of, you know, Obi Toppin has a really nice night. Siakam's got a great night. Halliburton is a little bit, I think they need more from him scoring wise, as we've talked about, but has generally a pretty solid day. But at the end of the third quarter, they started to miss a bunch of shots, like open shots. Miles Turner is probably the worst. Like, he's 0 of 6 from 3 in this game. And they miss some shots. Siakam misses, you know, there's like a challenge three that he has, but one that he's been hitting. You know, Halliburton misses a couple. Like, you just start missing some shots. And then fourth quarter, Oklahoma City turns the defense up to a million. And then things get crazy at the end. That's where we'll go next. We'll talk about the ending, all the officiating stuff that everyone's whining about. I will tell you now, I don't think it's as valid as some others, but I'm willing to hear arguments. 301-230-0980 if you want to get in on the discussion. And we're talking NBA Finals with you here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. YouTube, you can watch us live streaming every single day, all 3 hours. NBA Finals Game 5 tonight. Talking about Game 4 now, which was an Oklahoma City win, thanks in large part to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Also the defense of Lu Dort. Good gracious, what he did to Halliburton there in the second half, especially. That contributes to the series being tied at 2, going back to OKC. But, Anthony, as tends to happen when Scott Foster officiates an NBA Finals game, people want to talk about Scott Foster. Now, I will be honest with the audience, as I was with you. I, in a stunning turn of events, did not watch the full game Friday night because it went late. And, well, you'd be like, come on, Craig. On a Friday night, you're really not staying up to watch an NBA Finals game? On a Finals that is awesome that you really are interested in and into? I coach a very early class on Saturday morning. I didn't get to make that decision. It's just when we could do it. And so I actually wake up earlier on Saturdays than I do during the week. Benefits of having a 4 p.m. show in the afternoon. So, yeah, I didn't watch this game, the second half of this game. Well, I obviously knew what happened all weekend. I actually didn't watch the game until this morning. And I was in the middle of, like, the third quarter, and we were texting. And you're like, man, Scott Foster. And I'm like, I ain't seen anything yet. Keep watching. You know, I'm pretty deep into it before I'm like, this might be what people are talking about. What's the beef with Scott Foster in this game? I want to hear it from you. I heard a little bit in Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe's recap pod what some of Bill's gripes were. But
so Bill was upset too.
Yeah, Bill Simmons, that's his jam. He loves to complain about especially Scott Foster. But and often I agree, to be fair. This one didn't seem as egregious to me, but there were some things. What you look at the end of this game and the officiating. What made you so and the internet so irate?
I mean, again, like everything seemed to be trending towards a Pacers win. They had a huge lead in the fourth. Granted, they weren't hitting their shots, but in order to like make it close, Shai finally started getting to the free throw line. Craig, through 2.5 quarters, Shai had 0 free throw attempts. I was so surprised. I'm like, and I had texted Zaire because he was at the game. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Shai, he hasn't shot a free throw this entire game. They're allowing the guys to play. And then next thing you know, here comes Shai, you know, getting all these calls. And, you know, granted, some of them were fouls, but I feel like the one against Lu Dort, when he gets a steal on Tyrese Halliburton, he clearly pushes Tyrese, and you probably haven't seen the angle, but the angle that I saw, he clearly pushes him, and it's a foul in my eyes, but they don't call it. And then at the end of the game, Shai pushes off, he travels, and then he also, you know, makes the shot. So I think two big plays in the game that go against Indiana, that goes in the Thunder favor, and it just, you know, it just every time Scott Foster's in one of these situations, it always ends up bad for, you know, whatever team is, you know, winning or, you know, I don't know. He always seems to, you know, make the game or the series that much closer because of his impact on the game. That's my beef with him.
So I will say in the first half, when they called that foul, the flagrant on
Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin. Yeah, come on, dude.
That was an egregiously bad call.
That wasn't a flagrant, right?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm actually watching because I went to X and searched, or went to Twitter and searched. I was like, Lu Dort fouls Scott Foster. And there's actually nothing that pops up. But that popped back up, and I was reminded how egregious that one. And I love that he got on the PA and was like, there's a clear wind-up and follow-through. And I'm like, there's clearly neither. There's no windup, and then there's a play on the ball, which I realize is not inherently, you know, a yes or no, but there's a play on the ball. There's a huge body foul. It's just it's very stupid. Very, very bad call. But the SGA push-off one, like, I don't know. Yeah, that's a foul on Dort. That's a bad miss. But, you know, it's also his hands are kind of on him versus like some huge push. I don't think that one's insane It's a bad, it's a missed call. It's bad. The SGA one, it's a push off, yes. It's also a hand check on Neesmith. And depending on what you define as the gather, it's not a walk. So I could see where you'd be like, yeah, that was a walk, because he's trying to gather himself as opposed to the gather, which is like an official term in the NBA rulebook. And that one just doesn't bother me. That one's kind of playoff basketball. I think the valid gripes with the game are the inconsistency from beginning to end in terms of what was allowed, where you were allowing certain stuff earlier. Now you're calling some more touch fouls. There's a ton of free throws in the game. But I also just think like the game got more physical as it went. And I don't look at a ton of those calls. Like, yeah, those are two ones that you want to call the missed calls. Fine. But like, how many of the one times the SGA went to the line were they incorrectly called? Neesmith kept fouling him. Stop fouling him. Like that. The what changed wasn't that Scott Foster decided it was time to call fouls. What changed is the Oklahoma City Thunder went to a small pick and roll, got Andrew Nembhard off of SGA finally. For some reason, SGA is perfectly fine going against Aaron Neesmith, who, by the way, remember in the last round, Neesmith murdered Jalen Brunson. Like, that was the end of the Knicks, Neesmith on Brunson. This round, it's Nembhard on SGA. Different guys like different styles. The long friendship of Nembhard and SGA, probably something where SGA or Nembhard knows all SGA's moves. Like, whatever. Whatever the reason is, that's what changed. The game changed. I don't think there was like this huge officiating change. Things were physical. It's a finals game. They called enough to keep it under control. Neesmith couldn't keep his hands out of the freaking cookie jar. He fouled out because he committed fouls. And that's why SGA kept going to the free throw line. The play's late. Like Mathurin, I hate that those calls happen, but they're fouls. Like that's why Mathurin doesn't close games for them. He's only in there because Neesmith fouls out. And so if all you want to do is look at the stats and be like, this is crazy, I would tell you needed to watch the game. Because I, as a neutral observer watching that game, never once went, oh, Scott Foster's ruining it. And I think he called stuff both ways. So it's not like he tilted the officiating obscenely one way or the other. In OKC turned their defense up. Indiana stopped hitting shots. Oklahoma City found something offensively with the small pick and roll. And they won the game. That's, to me, that's what happened.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, it's just interesting that Scott Foster is always at the center of a lot of these, you know, game discussions and calls. Like, he's the common denominator in a lot of it. And in a game, again, where it seemed like Indy was going to go up 3-1.
But, like, why did they not? Was it because Scott Foster started calling?
Now, you necessarily can't just blame him, but
then what are we saying?
I just think he had a hand in it.
Scott Foster calls a lot of big games because he is, by the NBA system, graded out as a very good official. He also will make sure things don't get out of hand. Certainly, he has had some games where you're like, what in the world are you doing, man? Where, like, Scott Foster likes attention too much to be a referee. He likes to be involved in the action. He calls a lot of fouls. He's a very tight, like, he loves to be super oh, we got a block, and it's right there, and it's on the floor. You're like, bro, you are not trying to do it.
He looked excited when Nembhard fouled SGA on the shoulder. All right, bro, not like, too much.
But he leaves very little. I think players actually appreciate it because he is very decisive. He's very clear. He communicates a lot with players.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm not going to be like, I hate, let me say this very clearly. I hate that I'm defending Scott Foster, right? Scott Foster has a history of whatever, right? He's been involved in a lot of controversial calls and games. And part of that is because he's calling a lot of games as the head guy. And so he's in a position to do that. Was this game changed dramatically from an Indiana win to an Oklahoma City win by Scott Foster doing anything other than his job or doing something outside of his job? No. He called foul, like him calling fouls that Indiana committed is about what Indiana did, not what Scott Foster did.
Yeah.
It's not Scott Foster's job to save the game for Indiana when they stop moving their feet and start grabbing onto SGA. Like, that's just, it's not how it goes. So, did they miss a couple? Sure. Did they probably miss a couple the other way at some point in the game? Probably. Did it seem like there was something untoward happening to me? No. But how the game is officiated definitely matters. And the one thing that Simmons said that I thought was correct in terms of how Scott Foster truly impacted the game was because they called a bunch of ticky-tack fouls towards the end, or they seemingly called a bunch of stuff, the game lacked flow. When the game flows, that's in Indiana's favor. But again, I don't think that it was so far out of bounds or that they changed so much that it's something to talk about. I think there were a lot of fouls that happened later in the game as guys got tired in an intense game four where there's so much on the line. And Indiana, if they had kept their hands out of the cookie jar, maybe the game would have had more flow and maybe they would have won anyway. Indiana, by the way, undefeated, I think it is, in the playoffs, like 20, or, you know, I guess it would be 20, but it would be like 12 wins when they score over 110 points, 0-6 when they don't. So flow, pace, those things matter to Indiana. But also, you know, you score more than 110 points, hit more shots, which they failed to do as well. All right, it's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, we'll discuss the other big story of the NBA weekend. Desmond Bane traded for how many picks? Why? Although at first I was like, this is a joke, I actually think it kind of makes sense. We'll get into it next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. So, Anthony, where were you when you found out about the Desmond Bane trade?
Is this Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday morning.
I was actually on my way to my flag football game.
Okay. What was your reaction to the trade?
So I didn't see all of the details until later, I guess later that evening. But I was surprised that, you know, he was getting traded and that the Magic were, you know, was the team he was like headed to. I thought sort of kind of what the Grizzlies had.
Too much. What was your reaction to the amount that was going back to Orlando or from Orlando to Memphis?
Insane.
Yeah. Insane. That was my first thought too. The more I've thought about it, the more I kind of get it. And part of that is we have Tim Bontemps coming up at 5:00. Truth be told, I talked to Tim earlier today, so that just was better with his schedule. So Tim was able to talk me into it, which will, if you're listening to the interview, will become quite obvious as you hear Tim's explanation. But I was sitting on my couch, like having a lazy morning, playing some PlayStation, and you know. Thing goes off. Oh, Shams alert. Trade. What? How many? Immediately sends off to the group chat. Guys, did you know Desmond Bane is worth 5 first round picks and 2 rotation players? Ultimately, the return for Desmond Bane, if you did miss it over the weekend, the Grizzlies guard who shot 41% from 3 last year, very, very good player, although never named an all-star. Probably been on the verge of that a couple times when Memphis was really good a couple years ago. But 4 unprotected first-round picks. Cole Anthony, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and a pick swap. So essentially 5 first-rounders, potentially 5 first-rounders, and 2 players who played real minutes for them last year. The thing is, though, KCP did not have a good year, and his contract is... significant. So in some ways, it's a salary dump of KCP along with the acquisition for Bane. So you give up something to also unload KCP. It just so happens that it helps make the money work in the trade. Anthony is is an expiring deal that they were probably going to trade this summer, in part because he's a good player with really high variance. Some days he's really, really good, and some days you're like, dude, what are we doing? But he's on an expiring deal. That's the contract that had to make the money work. So it's the two teams are dealing, and they have to be fairly close on the salary going back and forth this upcoming season. So it kind of works out that he's in it. If you think of it that way, of like, this is really closer to 3 first-round picks plus an extra one to unload KCP, then it starts to make a little more sense. Because the idea that you trade 3 first-round picks for Desmond Bane is definitely rich on the idea that he has never been an all-star, right? 3 first-round picks a couple years ago for Pascal Siakam, which is right now everyone's like, that was a great trade for Indiana. That at least Pascal was an all-star. Like, Pascal was an all-star pretty consistently. So Pascal Siakam from, let's say, 2018 to 2022 or, you know, even 2024, better player than Desmond Bane has been in his career. But Bane is exactly what Orlando needs. A guy who's going to come in to one of the better defensive teams in the league last year, continue to play great defense, and they were the worst three-point shooting team in the league. And here's a guy who shoots it at 41%. He's been around, a really, really high-level winner with that Memphis team a couple years ago. He was a huge part of with Ja and Triple J. That ran its course. And we'll see what else, Bontemps and others reporting that there's not really anything else that's probably going to happen in Memphis. But who knows? Apparently, teams are sniffing around on Triple J. And I'm sure teams are sniffing around on Morant as well, seeing if he wants a fresh start and wants to get out of Memphis. But I actually kind of get it. For Orlando, and while the price is really, really steep, and we went last year through these kinds of trades and how often they don't work when Mikal Bridges was traded from New York, I do understand it from Orlando's standpoint. Would I want to give up less? Of course. Even if I say, hey, these picks are top 10 protected, which I'm hoping to then give them for 4 first-round picks because I have a long competitive window with Paolo Banchero as one of the 5 best players in the league, which he looks like he could be on track to be. But it's a lot, man, for a guy that's never made an all-star team. And even if he's the perfect fit for you, or he better be the perfect fit for you, because if not, you've just locked yourself into mediocrity, which is the worst place you can be in the entire league.
Yeah, well, you talk about fit. And we've seen, Alex Caruso get traded last offseason. We've seen Drew Holiday get traded 2 offseasons ago. So when you talk about fit, you need somebody, who's going to be able to gel in, be that third option. They already have Paolo. They have Franz Wagner. Jalen Suggs is, another cornerstone piece that they have. So if they can get Desmond Bane to go in there and, be their second or third option and shoot the ball consistently as he's done, the past 3-4 years, I think this is, a trade situation where it could be as valuable as those, role players that we've been seeing, be on championship teams the last couple of years.
And that's the thing, right, is how much is one of those guys work? And I'm sure this is something I'll talk about a lot on the show moving forward because I think I really, really like the concept. We hear about team chemistry a lot, but there's a different word that some in the league and some people around basketball throw around, which is alchemy. And I literally read this section of a book last night. So this is probably some recency bias, but I think it's a really cool concept that goes to exactly what you were just talking about. Alchemy, like chemistry is like, hey, we have all these things. They come together. How do they work? Do they blow up or do they not? Alchemy is we take these things that exist as they are now and we create something new. And the new thing is better than the old thing. And so if you think about, I'm trying to think of a really great piece. You take, what's his name? Derek White. Derek White's a really good player. Really good player. But if he's in San Antonio, like bopping around, you're like, this guy's good, but like, how good is he? You put him in Boston and you're like, oh my God, he's the key to a championship. Like what he does to everyone else changes everyone else. Same thing with Drew Holiday. I think you could make this argument about him specifically in Milwaukee with what he brought to that team, right? So there's these certain pieces and these certain, you know, amalgamations of pieces that, you know, it affects everyone else. And the thing that, and basically, like, the really good line, I got to go back and, like, I need to screenshot this page because there was the way that the author wrote it was so good. But it's basically like, I can't be me without this version, this best version of me without you, right? And I think that's what the Magic are counting on with Bane is, like, here's a guy that's really good on his own, on any team in the NBA. He's going to shoot 40%. He's going to play tough defense. But if we surround him with the guys that we have here, that we have all these cutters and these drivers, and we can let him kind of uniquely sit in that role, what that does for him, and I think more importantly, like, a guy like Paolo, all of a sudden having a shooter like Bane around him, says, we're going to go from a first-round team to a conference finals team. Because that one piece is such a perfect fit and will elevate everything we do that we completely change who we are, which is not a bad thing. They're good, but they need to be better than what they are right now if they're going to get where they want to go.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, Bane, you know, average 20, and, you know, so I think from that alone, getting more scoring, getting more shooting, and then you also get some experience, like, because he's been to the playoffs. Granted, this season he didn't have all that good of a playoffs against the Thunder, but again, just putting it all together, I think this could be, you know, something special that they're brewing down there. Because, again, they're young as hell, Craig. So they're that's also why young. I think they don't mind moving off these first-round picks because, again, they're already young. They want to develop some of the guys that they already have in the little bullpen.
They've got the young guys. They've got the star in Banchero. Like, they've got all the pieces. Now it's about getting the right, exact, curated final pieces. And those, like, they can't wait for a guy to come in the draft. So what's a 2028 first-round pick to them? What's a 2029 first-round pick to them? Like, that's the thing, is, like, those guys aren't going to help them win in the Banchero window. And so now they're willing to sacrifice that and say, whatever happens post-Banchero, we'll figure out post-Banchero. But right now, either we're going to win or this isn't going to work, and at that point you trade Banchero, and that's how you get your assets back for the post-Banchero window. Obviously, they're not thinking about that right now. All right, when we get back, weekend in review, right? We've changed around a million things in this show. I think it's a game of what else happened this weekend next here on the Hoffman Show. But first, a look at what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Hoffman Show, Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I see what you're doing here, Anthony. I was like, we're doing the weekend preview. This song in honor of our good friend, Shannon Harris. And the DC Defenders.
Got that dub, Craig.
They sure did. Congrats to the DC Defenders. Big ol' win. Did you wind up watching any of it, Anthony?
I did not. I did see a couple of snippets. I saw when the game was, like, not close. I mean, I guess close, because by the tail end of the game, it got out of hand. But
it didn't take the tail end of the game.
Yeah.
It was an absolute barn burner. And DC was the one burning the barn, to say the least. 58-34 is the final. By the way, this is our weekend in review, aka what else happened this weekend, and it's brought to you by
nobody, Greg.
Okay. Jordan Ta'amu threw for 390 yards, 4 touchdowns. Defenders almost rushed for 200 yards as well. 58-34, the win over the Michigan Panthers. They had 580 yards of offense. That's a single league single game record, and they did it to win a championship. So I had this on a little bit in the background. Like, we were doing some stuff Saturday night, get back. Like, they've already got a little bit of a lead. You know, I'm kind of cleaning up some other stuff. And then by the time I was ready to, like, potentially lock in and watch, if it was a game, they were up like 31-14. And it was going in at halftime. They dump trucked them.
Yeah, wasn't good.
I mean, was good. Was great.
No. Oh, it was definitely good for us.
Not good in terms of a competitive game, though.
No, I think Michigan, or the state of Michigan, might have gripes with us. You know, the Commanders go in there, you know, whoop some butt. And then you have the D.C. Defenders go in there and whoop some butt, too.
So sorry about it.
Ah.
Hate to see it. This is all just revenge for making me walk to that Uber at the draft a couple years ago.
Ah, there it is.
You know, sometimes the universe has a way of looking out. Got some other questions about some things going on in the universe, but we'll leave those between me and the universe, you know?
Yeah.
Things didn't go so great for some other sports teams from the district this weekend. It was a bad weekend for the girls, Anthony. It was a bad weekend for both the Mystic and the Mystics and the Spirit. The Mystics, talk about getting your butts handed to you in the first half. Oh, that was an ouchie. Alicia Gray for the Atlanta Dream, 19 points in the first half alone. The Mystics, I mean, it wasn't the worst loss in the WNBA this season. I guess that's the nicest thing I can say about it from the Washington side of things. There was that Sky Liberty game where I think it was 102-52 or something like
that.
A couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, Alicia Gray just went absolutely bananas. In 29 minutes, she had 32 points, 6 of 9 from 3, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Another 14 points, including 4 threes from Ryan Howard. Nas Hillman had 10 off the bench. But the other side of that is the Mystics from the field shot 29.5%, Anthony. 29.5% from the field. Just an abysmal shooting day. The one solo highlight for Washington was the Shakira Austin block on Brittany Griner, which resulted in a friendly shove from Griner to Austin. That was a pretty funny moment between the youngster and the vet. But, yeah, man, Sony had 10 thanks to 6 of 7 from the free throw line, but she was only 2 of 8 from the field, 0 of 3. And when I say she had 10, she was the leading scorer. No one else in double figures, just 3 of 17 from 3. They also shot 17 of 23 from the line. It was like literally just a lid on the bucket. Brutal day at the office. I don't know what else to tell you, man. That was just like, if anything, it's one of those where if you're Sidney Johnson, you get in the locker room and you go, "That sucked. Let's never talk about it again. See you for practice tomorrow." You don't. Yeah. I don't think there's anything that you have to say beyond that.
Was that their first game back though after like a week hiatus?
It was a week off. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that probably has something to do with it. But I would have expected them to come out, you know, with a little bit more energy.
Yeah.
But
should have been reared up, ready to play. Yeah. They just forgot how to shoot, apparently. Just a bad day. They'll next face off tomorrow against the Chicago Sky and Angel Reese, who Reese, a nice triple-double over the weekend as the Sky finally got a win. But Mystic Sky tomorrow night at Wintrust Arena in Chicago. As for the Spirit this weekend, they let in a goal about midway through the first half. Really nice play by Jesse Fleming, who is a constant thorn in the side. No pun intended. She's a Portland thorn. But also great Canadian international. And their rookie, Kaya Hanks, puts one home. Hanks, unfortunately, got hurt later in that first half. And Washington just had nothing on attack all day. Just super toothless. Couldn't get anything going. Couldn't get their best players on the ball. Just oddly ineffective. And ultimately, Portland was able to get a second late in the game. But You gotta be able to have something going both ways, and otherwise this is how it's going to go. And Spirit, after a flawless start to the season on the road, 5-0-0, and a rough start at home, their last two have inverted that. Their best performance of the season probably was their last home game against North Carolina last weekend, and then this past weekend, one of their worst, if not their single worst, performance of the year in terms of 90 minutes of subpar play. And that's that. They got one more game before the international. I think one more game. Might have two before the international break. So they're back in action this weekend. All right. That's what else happened this weekend. Anything else, Anthony, that we want to touch on? Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark's return later on in the show. Anything else that we need to...
The Nats have officially lost 8 straight after the A. They got swept by the Marlins, the worst team in the MLB.
Really bad. Well, now they got the Rockies, the other worst team in the MLB. Yeah. I think actually the Rockies are even worse than the Marlins. The Rockies are barely a major league team. So they're in town. We'll talk about that with Toby Altizer later on in the show. So that's going to get between the losing streak, Brady House getting the call up, and Davey's comments. That's going to get its own segment today. So Nationals, you want more attention. So sorry, you're going to get it. That's coming up at 6 o'clock. 5:30, going to talk about Commanders and have they done enough on their defensive line. Interesting article from John Keim at ESPN. But coming up next, John's colleague at ESPN, Tim Bonteps, with us talking NBA Finals and this big old Desmond Bane trade. Also, latest on Kevin Durant here on the Team 980.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.